Okay, let's, oh, wait a minute. You're not gonna be able to read that. Good morning. Did you happen to bring a pen with you? Really? No, not a pen. A pen. A whiteboard pen. That would be helpful. I didn't mean if you're taking notes. I meant. Let's go. We are 5 minutes late. Where we are.
Did you see Alice rewrote it right now? It's a disaster.
Why? I saw on the way up. It took me longer than usual.
I spent 12 minutes trying to make that left from Oman.
I never go that way.
I
never go that way.
I could see where the car
I come up Price.
Behind the school.
You mustn't go that way.
No, the come up Price. Cut up Price.
But Alec was no better today.
Well, yeah, but it's much harder to make the left of Olive than to go up Olive. Olive was much faster.
Yeah, I made that mistake this morning.
Yes, I never go up Old Bonham. For the record, and now it's on tape, it'll be on the internet for posterity. Okay. Let us go back to where we were up to 2 weeks ago, because last week we had a snow day, and therefore we got canceled. Just out of curiosity, I mean, not like it's going to happen again this year, because it's probably not, but if we have a snow day at school, should we just have the shear at school? There's no reason to cancel the shear. I mean, get around in the snow.
Except for all of our kids are
home. The kids are home. That's the problem. That's true.
It's not that we don't need them, though.
Well, that's true.
That is very
true. All right, we'll have to figure that out. We'll have to make
a... I never do that.
Okay, we'll figure that one out. Bizvat Hashem, there won't be another school day this winter, because I think we're done. In April?
Yes, we did. They canceled school. It was like a few days before Pesach.
But it's
never
rare.
Forget.
It's very rare.
No,
I had all those kids home.
In Israel, in Poland, there was a big snow.
Yeah, Israel. This is not Israel.
Yeah, but if in Israel,
in case we haven't noticed. In more ways than one. All right. We were in the middle of a discussion about the story of the Meraglim of Yehoshua. And what we did first was we went back to the story of Moshe's spies, and we analyzed the story or the description of the Meraglim as Yehoshua sent them, as Moshe sent them, both as it's described in Parshat Shlach, as well as the way it's described in Parshat Devarim. The conclusion we came to was that there were, in fact, two very different missions at hand, that require completely different parameters. A reconnaissance military spy mission, and a, let's call it a spiritual mission of the division of the land of Israel according to the tribes, which is more of a survey-type mission. Survey-type mission, you send for the representation of the spies, of the tribes, you send 12 representatives, you represent every tribe. You go north, south, east, west, along the length and breadth of the country. You send the elder statesmen who have the respect of the community. You're dealing with a mission whose purpose it is essentially to map out which tribes would go where. Which tribes would go where. And that's the mission that the Ribbono Shel Olam sent Moshe on. Shlach lecha anashim v'yaturu et Eretz Kanaan. The people at the same time had requested a alternative mission, which was Nishlecha anashim lefanenu, v'yachperu lanu et ha'aretz, v'yomru lanu et ha'derech asher na'aleba. Let, as described in Sefer Devarim, let us send people that will spy out the land and tell us which way to enter and which city to conquer and how to conquer. And that was a purely military reconnaissance mission. The problem starts when Moshe superimposes one mission on the other. He's sending 12 people anyway, so he'll just give them the additional task of the spy mission, and that's where things get derailed. But what's important why did I go through all of that? Because what I wanted to derive from it, what I wanted to conclude from it, was the parameters of what constitutes a military reconnaissance mission versus what constitutes a mission to divide the land of Israel by tribes. The former requires a very different constitution of spies. And what you sense from the story of Yahushua's spies is that Yahushua learned that lesson. He saw that very clearly. And so from the parameters of how Yahushua sends his spies to Yericho, we can work our way backwards and say, okay, what's going through Yahushua's mind? What is Yahushua's intent when he sends these two meraglim? Is he looking at the reconnaissance military mission that Bnei Yisrael were looking at, the spy mission? Is he looking at the spiritual division of the land of Israel mission? And the answer, I think, is very clear. What was he, when he sends, how many spies does he send? Two. Elder statesmen or young, energetic, strong warriors? Right, considering the fact that they're going to have to climb down the wall and hide in the hills for 3 days, I would assume he sends young warriors, although there is a medrash that one of the two spies he sent was Kalev, because of the history of Kalev's involvement. Kalev would be at this point at least 80 years old, but that's a midrashic issue. Certainly he sends strong individuals. To where does he send them? North, south, east, west, length and breadth of the country, or one city? One city. 40-day mission or 3-day mission? Three. So all of the parameters of this mission clearly, and it's circumscribed to a 3-day mission, because he sends them before they leave, they break camp, and he tells them we're going to cross the Jordan in 3 days hence. So he's told them from the outset, this is a 3-day mission maximum. You have to meet us back here on this side of the Jordan within 3 days. So all of the parameters of this mission speak of a purely militaristic reconnaissance, strategic attempt to understand how to conquer Yericho. What is it about Yericho that they need to find out? I would assume they need to find out what the weaknesses are in the city's fortifications. I would assume they need to know what the strength of the wall is. One of the major issues that any army attacking a city in the ancient world needed to know was what the sources of sustenance are for the city. Where do they keep the warehouses? Where does the water come from? There's a story in Shmuel Bet where Yoav attacks the capital of Ammon. Rabat Bnei Ammon, and he tells David HaMelech that he's captured the central city, the Ir HaMelech, and he's taken the Ir HaMayim, the city of water, meaning he's laid siege to the city that holds the water for the community. Actually, an interesting passage. I'll show it to you. Take a look at Shmuel Bet, Perek Yud Bet. I have a few extras in the Shmuel Bet Yud Bet. Towards the end of the perek, perek pasuk chavav, vayelachem Yoav b'Rabat Bnei Ammon. Yoav goes to battle against the city of Rabat Bnei Ammon, city of Rabat, which is the capital of Ammon. Vayelkod et Ir Hamelucha. And he captures the capital city, the city of the kingdom. Vayishlach Yoav malachim el David vayomer. And he sends messengers to David. And he sends, in pasuk chaf zayin. He sends messengers to David. Vayomer nilchamti b'rabah. I've waged war against the city of Rabah. Gam lachadati et ir hamayim. I've captured the city of the water. You with me? Everybody with me? Shmuel Bet, Perek Yud Bet, Pasuk Chaf Chet. Shmuel Bet, Perek Yud Bet, Pasuk Chaf Chet. Or Pasuk of Zion. Let's go back. Vayishlach Yoav Malachim al David Vayomer Nilchamti Birabah Gam Lachadati et Ir Hamayim. Sends messengers to David. I've waged war against Rabah. I've captured the city of the water. Vayata Esof et Yeter Ha'am B'chane al Ha'ir V'lochda Pen Elkod Ani et Ha'ir V'nikras Shmi Aleh. He says to David, if you want this battle in your name, you better come now. Otherwise, I go in for the kill and the battle's in my name. It's an interesting dialogue between Yoav and David, unrelated to our discussion. But what is relevant to our discussion is that what's the key point in the battle? What's the turning point? When does he send a message to David to say to him, it's now or the battle's mine, is the moment he captures Ir Hamayim. Because it was standard procedure. You needed to know that information. When you laid siege to a city or you attacked a city, the first thing you needed to know was where the waters are. And when you're attacking a city with a wall, the last thing you want to do is a frontal assault. That's the best way to lose your army. It's the best way to lose your soldiers. A frontal assault against a walled city is never a good idea, especially when you have no armament. The Israelite army is an enormous fighting force. This is an issue we'll come back to in Sefer Yehoshua many times. They have an enormous fighting force. They, if you think about the numbers, 600,000 soldiers above the age of 20, in the parameters of the size of his armies of those days, was an enormous force. So, in a certain sense, they have an upper hand. They have an advantage. It's not, we're not fighting against the odds. We're fighting with the odds, except that what we don't have are chariots, horses, armaments. We have 600,000 foot soldiers with spears and shields. So if we're fighting in the open fields, foot soldier to foot soldier, we have the advantage. If we're fighting against a walled city with the defense and the armaments, then we are at a tremendous disadvantage. So one of the tactics we will see again and again employed in Sefer Yehoshua is divide and conquer. Yeshua is constantly concerned on two fronts. Number one, he's concerned about the walls. He's got to break the walls. And the only way to break the walls, outside of the way Jericho's walls are broken, which is a separate issue, but the only way to breach the wall is either to lay siege to the city, which we discussed already was a problem for the fight against Canaan. They weren't allowed to lay siege to a city. Or find a way to draw the army out of the wall. Get them out of the wall, out of the city, and into the open field, and then you have the advantage. And that's a tactic Yeshua will employ again and again. Find a way, whatever the way is, to draw the army out of the city. That's Yeshua's biggest challenge, one of the two biggest challenges. The walls is one. His other challenge is that every single city in the land of Canaan essentially is its own independent kingdom. Yerushalayim has its own king, and Debir has its own king, and Lachish has its own king, and every city is little city-states. Yoshua's biggest fear is that the cities will align themselves together to fight Israel and create an alliance of large numbers. So Yoshua's tactic from a military strategy is he has two agendas. Number one, draw the armies out of the cities, and number two, quick, decisive victories that divide and conquer. Divide the land and figure out a way to make sure that the local population do not align themselves with each other and create an alliance of large numbers. Those are the two strategic points that will carry Yoshua through the entire conquest of Canaan. And we'll see them over and over again. Jericho is his first challenge. He's got a city with a wall. He's got to take that city, and he doesn't. And to do that, he needs strategic information. What are the water sources? What are the strengths of the wall? What is the strength of the army within those walls? He needs strategic information. So he sends a simple, straightforward military reconnaissance mission, two people, one city, short term, defined parameters, find me the weaknesses, find me the parameters for how to conquer Jericho. One thing is clear. What does Yeshua not know at this stage of the game? knows a lot. What does he not know about how Yericho is going to fall? What Yeshua doesn't know is that the walls are going to fall on their own. How do I know that? Well, number one, it hasn't been talked about. The instruction to Yeshua as to how that's going to happen takes place in chapter 6. We haven't gotten there yet. But there's evidence from this chapter 2 that Yeshua doesn't know that yet. Namely, two proofs that Yeshua doesn't know how Yericho's walls are going to fall or be breached.
Well, does he not know that they're not going to fall, but he doesn't know.
He has no idea how they're going to take Yericho. He knows Yericho's the first target. He has no idea what they're going to do to take Yericho. From his perspective, we're going to go in and deal with Yericho the way we're going to deal with every other walled city in this country, which is to find a way to either breach the wall or siege the army out, starve them out, or draw them out. But the one thing you can't do is destroy the wall. They don't have the physical armaments to take out a wall of city like Yericho. We're not there yet. That's the spy's perspective. We're dealing with Yeshua. But you're right. That's the second proof. Let's deal with the first proof. Yeshua doesn't need to send spies if the walls are coming down. The way we understand the fall of Yericho, he doesn't need spies at all. If you think about it, blow your trumpets, surround the city for 7 days and blow your trumpets. There's no element of surprise. You need spies when you're going to attack a city with an element of surprise. You want to be able to go in, take out the key strategic points. What do they call it in military terms? The command and control centers? Right? Take out the command and control operation, and then you cripple the city, and then you can go in. From Yeshua's point of view, he has no idea what's going to happen. So he sends two spies. The whole mission is exercise in futility. If the walls, if you're going to blow your trumpets, let the whole world know you're standing at the doorpost, and then the walls are going to fall. Shtadlus is one thing, but the Shtadlus here runs completely contrary to the mechanism. The mechanism is to blow your trumpets and announce to the whole world that you're standing at the doorstep, and Yeshua is busy sending spies. So clearly his mission, that's my point, that the very mission is predicated on the assumption that he doesn't know what Yericho is going to, how Yericho is going to fall. Question that I will hold and answer at the end of today's shiur is this mission a success or a failure?
Who are the people in all of this?
Which people?
Israel.
They're moving from their camping guild in Avot Moab, 3 days closer to the edge of the Jordan River where they're going to cross.
Are they nervous about this?
Who? Nervous about who? Nervous about what? Nervous about Yericho or nervous about sending spies?
No, I mean about Yericho. I
don't think nervous is the word. I think that there's a question. Okay, what are we going to do? We're ready. Lead us, tell us. But they're not quite sure what they're going to do. Right? Yeshua has the same question. Okay, we know what our target is. Now, how do you take it? You've got a group of foot soldiers, no armaments, and a wall. So the first thing you do is you send two spies, send them into the heart of the city, figure out all of the strategic information that they need to know, bring back a report. The spies certainly don't know what the plan is. How do I know that? Because, well, besides the fact that they hide, because the plan is, in fact, for the wall to fall in on itself to implode. And when they want to give Rachav safe house, security, and say to her, we will spare your life, they say to her, get all your family and everybody who you think you want saved and put them in their house, which is inside the wall. The wall, it's going to fall. What's the most dangerous place to be in Jericho on day 7? Most dangerous place to be in Jericho on day 7 is inside the house that's inside the wall. Simple equation. The wall is going to implode and fall in on itself. You have to have a supernatural miracle to save the house where everybody else, the entire wall, falls. Okay, but that's not what they were anticipating, and certainly not two lowly spies are going to decide that they're going to dictate to God what kind of miracles he's going to perform. And Yeshua certainly had no anticipation that this was going, they had no intent to save anybody from Jericho. So that certainly was not part of Yeshua's plan, and it certainly wasn't part of the spies' plan. They ran into a snag. Right, what was the snag? What was this? What was the fault in the plan? What went wrong?
Well, that is a anticipated one thing, and something else happened.
Right. No, I don't mean from that point of view. I mean, strategically, what happened in the spy mission? What went wrong in their mission?
They got caught.
They got caught when? Day one, right from the beginning. They walked into Jericho, and it was known that they were there. They walked into Rachav's house. Rachav took them up to the roof and hid them. Then she threw them over the wall and said goodbye. So what practical strategic information did they discover in their 3 days spy mission? Zero. When they come back to Yeshua, and Yeshua says, okay, what did you discover? What are the sources of water? Answer. We weren't in the city long enough to find out. What are the weaknesses in the wall? We have no idea. We just know that there's one house in the wall that has to stay. Right? We don't have a clue because we weren't in the city long enough to find out. How many soldiers does the city have? We don't know. We weren't in the city long enough to find out. It's a fascinating mission. Yoshua did everything by the book. He corrected every mistake Moshe made. And the result was a success or a failure? A failure. It's a comedy of errors. From the moment they walk into Jericho, they are caught. And there's nothing productive that they come out with from this mission. And you have to ask yourself, what was it all about? Truth, it wasn't completely a waste of time. What did they learn they didn't know before? What piece of information, what single piece of information did they learn that they didn't know before? Well, the only thing they learn is what she tells them. Right? There's nothing else there. They're not there long enough to find out anything else. So the only thing they learn is what she tells them. Well, what does she tell them? What she tells them is, starting with... starting with Pasuk Tet. Yeshua Perek Bet. Our Perek of study. But Tomer el ha'anashim, she says to these people, she rang the phone, and she called them. But Tomer el ha'anashim, yadati ki natan Hashem lachem et ha'aretz. I know that God has given you this land. V'china fly matchem aleinu, your dread has fallen upon us. V'china mogu kol yoshvei ha'aretz mipneichem, the hearts of all of the inhabitants of the land has melted before you. We have heard how God had melted away or dried up the waters of the Yam Suf before you as you left Egypt. And we have heard how you have destroyed the two kings of Canaan, Og and Sichon, on the east side of the Jordan. Vanishma, we've heard. Vayimas levaveinu, our hearts have melted. V'lo kama od ruach Be'ish mipnechem, we have no spirit or courage against you. Ki Hashem Elokechem hu Elokim b'shamayim ima v'al ha'aretz mitachat. God is the God of the heavens and the earth below. She gives them a shir and a muna. She gives them a drasha, inspiring drasha. God is with you. God has given you this land. You're going to conquer it. You're going to take it. We know it. We're ready for it. We're here. Take us. That's the opening salvo. That's what she tells them. That's the dialogue. And when the spies come back, the only piece of information they deliver to Yoshua is a rephrase of Rachav's drasha. At the end of the parak, right? Well, lahavdu. But if they come back, take a look at Pasuk Chav Gimel, the very end. Vayashuvu shnei ha'anashim vayardu me'ahar. The two people come back from the mountains. Vayavru vayavo Yoshua ben Nun. They come back to Yoshua after 3 days. Very last verse of the chapter. Vayisaplu et kol ha-motz'ototam. They told Yoshua exactly what happened. We got to Yericho and we were caught right away and we went into the mountains. We hid for 3 days. Vayamru al Yoshua. And they said to Yoshua, this is the conclusion. Ki natan Hashem biyadeinu et kol ha-aretz. Vegam namogu kol yoshvei ha-aretz mipaneinu. God has given the land to us. The hearts of the inhabitants have melted away. Interesting observation for two people who have just spent 3 days hiding in the mountains because they didn't want to get caught.
That's a very different outcome from what happened with Moab.
100%. It's the exact opposite, and that's the irony of it. Moshe sent the spies on a reconnaissance on a spiritual mission to divide the land of Israel, to want the land of Israel, to be ready to enter the land, and they came back with the reconnaissance mission that was an abysmal failure. Yoshua sent two people on a reconnaissance mission that was an abysmal failure, and they come back with the spiritual message. We're ready, let's go, alon aleh, we can conquer it, we can go up to it. Why? Because we spent 3 days hiding from the soldiers in the foothills because we didn't want to get caught because our mission was discovered on the day one. So what have you told us about the strategic weaknesses of the city of Yericho? Nothing. We don't have a clue. It's this giant city with a giant wall. Let's go. The exact opposite of Moshe's mission than every level, save one. They're both failures. And that's the irony of it. We intuitively perceive that Yoshua's mission was a correction of Moshe's, of the mistakes of the Meraglim in the first place, and that Yoshua's mission was a success where Moshe's mission was a failure. From the point of view of what's going on in the text of Yoshua, Yoshua's mission was as much a failure as Moshe's mission, just the results were positive instead of negative. The result was the exact opposite. It was a success in the sense that they were, it didn't dishearten the people, because they were ready, and they certainly weren't going to make that mistake again. But from the perspective of the one who sent them, meaning from Yoshua's perspective, this was not the mission he sent them on. So now Yoshua has a problem. Namely, how does he take Yericho? He's left with the same problem he started with. All he knows is the people are ready for us to conquer and our people are ready to conquer. Okay, but how? He's left with the same mystery of the strategic... He's not getting that message yet at all. He's not getting that message yet at all. Yeah. God is with us.
Yeah.
God is with us. No? Okay, great. So we're going to dismantle the tanks and the air force? Well, I ask you a point blank question. Are you going to rely on God and dismantle your tanks? Okay, so now I got a wall. Here's my ishtadlus. I got a wall. How do I breach it? I did my ishtadlus. I sent two spies. They came back with zero. What do I do now? They came back with inspiration and no information. Thank you very much. Yeshua, as commander-in-chief, says, I would prefer the information at this stage of the day. I can provide the inspiration. I need the information. That wasn't what he sent them for. He didn't send them to come back with inspiration. He sent them to come back with information. So where do we go with this? I'll show you where we're going to go with this. We're going to jump to Perek He. Why are we going to jump to Perek He? Because if we really want to understand the dynamic of Yeshua's mindset here, we're going to jump to the very end, the turning point, the transitional point in Yeshua's understanding of what's about to take place. Then we can go back and we can put the whole story together. Perek Hay, we've skipped a whole bunch. We'll come back to it. We're gonna go do it in sequence. But I Perek Hay, they cross over the Jordan in chapter 3 and 4. In chapter 5, they are instructed to, remember, they crossed the Jordan on the 10th of Nisan. The 15th of Nisan is the first Pesach. They're going to be celebrating Pesach in Israel. To do that, they have to first circumcise themselves because they haven't done so for 40 years. So there's a bris milah, national bris milah. Then there's Korban Pesach for the first time. And then we come to verse 13. Very important question. Bezrat Hashem, when we get to Perek He, we will discuss it at length. Yeah. The other part of Perek He. Thank you very much. Okay. Yeah, tough crowd. Verse 13. Vayihi, biyot Yoshua b'Yericho. As Yoshua was at Yericho, they're encamped now at the base of Yericho. Vayisa inav vayar, v'hine ish omed l'negdo. Lifted up his eyes and he saw a man standing opposite him, v'charbo shlufa biyado, with his sword stretched forth in his hand. Right, his sword unsheathed, shlufa. Vayelech Yoshua elav, Yoshua approached him. Vayomer lo, and he said to him, I love this line, halanu ata im litzareinu. Are you with us, or are you our enemy? In other parlance, friend or foe? Identify yourself. What's the password? Yeshua is standing there. He lifts up his eyes and he sees a man who he doesn't recognize with a sword in his hand. First question you ask. You're the commander. You're the military leader. First question you ask. Right? Password. Friend or foe? Identify yourself. Standard procedure. Vayomer, the man answers, and he says, lo. No. Interesting answer. I asked you a question. Are you friend or foe? Answer, no. Neither friend nor foe. Kisar tzva Hashem atabati. For I am the angel, or the head of the army of God, the ministering angel of the army of God, Sar Tzva Hashem. Atavati, I have come now. So what does he say to Yeshua? He's neither friend nor foe. Who is he? He's a malach. Which indicates that the opening dialogue between Yeshua and this Sar Tzva Hashem, and you see from the response, immediately Yeshua's response is, Vayipol Yeshua al panav arza v'yishtachu. He hears that he's a malach, he falls on his face. Which means that when he first encountered him, he didn't recognize that he was a malach, which is not an uncommon phenomenon. There are many instances in Tanakh where various personalities are met by a malach and don't realize they're speaking to a malach until halfway through the dialogue. Eshet Manoach, Gidon, Shimshon's mother. There's all series of examples in Sefer Shoftim where they're talking to somebody and suddenly they realize they're talking to a malach. Who they thought they were talking to. Vayomer lo, he said to him, like Yeshua says to the Sar Tzva Hashem, Ma Adoni midaber al avdo. What does my master speak to his servant? Clearly a different tone then. Halanu ata im litzarenu, are you friend or foe? Vayomer Sar Tzva Hashem al Yehoshua. Sar Tzva Hashem says to Yehoshua, Shal na'alcha me'al raglecha ki ha'makom asher ata omed alav kodeshu. Take thy shoes from off thy feet, for the land, ground upon which you stand is holy ground. Vayas Yehoshua ke. Sound familiar? Right? Exactly the same dialogue that took place at the bush. Next verse. V'yiricho sogeret u'misugeret mipnei b'nei Yisrael en yotzei ve'en ba. Yiricho is surrounded by b'nei Yisrael. They've laid siege to the city. Nobody goes in, nobody goes out. Somebody explain to me what this malach has done. What has he contributed to this discussion? What has he added to this conversation? I've come now. What do you command your servant? Take your shoes off. And Yericho is surrounded by Bnei Yisrael. That's the dialogue. And then, one second, and then, Perek Vav begins, Vayomer Hashem el Yehoshua, and the Mefarshim suggest that when it says that God spoke to Yeshua, meaning God spoke to Yeshua through the Malach. This was what the Malach conveyed to him. Re'ein etate b'yadcha et Yericho v'et malkah gibrei chayel v'sabotem et ha'ir kol anshei ha'mechama hakif et ha'ir pamachat. He gives him the battle instructions for taking out the wall. Surround the city seven times, once each day. Blow the trumpets. On the seventh day, you surround the city seven times. Hakafot. Simchas Torah style. Right? Blow the trumpets on the seventh time, and the walls are going to come down on top of themselves. In other words, the battle plan for Yericho, he gives him here. So what is the message, what is the symbolism, what is the purpose of this vision between Yehoshua and this Sar Tzva Hashem? And here is a fascinating dialogue in the Mefarshim, based on the Gemara and Megillah, which is actually the source of a great polemic, but we're not going to get into the polemic too much today, because that's a discussion to itself. The same source page that I gave out last couple of weeks. I have extras if you don't have. There's extras here. You need more? Oh, sorry. Same source page. On the bottom, there's a Gemara from Megillah. Very famous Gemara. It's quoted often. You hear it in all kinds of polemical circles. Amarlo. When Yeshua says to this angel, Halanu atam letzareinu, are you for us or against us? The angel's answer is, remember we're dealing with Sar Tzva Hashem. Yeah. The Malach's answer is two words. Actually, he says to him two things. He says, number one, Atabati, which means I have come now. What's now? Number two, he says to him, take your shoes off. Land upon which you stand is holy ground, etc. Right, we have a burning bush, we have a Har Elokim, we have a Mamar Har Sinai kind of reference. We'll come back to it. But the first issue of Atah Bati, I have come now, if we would have said Bati Achshav, for Yericho, it's one thing. What does Atabati have come now? So the Gemara picks up on that nuance. And the Gemara says as follows. Amalo. The Malach said to him, Emesh bitaltem tamid shel ben habayim. V'achshav bitaltem tamud Torah. Yesterday, you were negligent and you postponed or you removed or you did not perform correctly the daily offering in the temple. What that means and how he got to that, I have no idea. Separate discussion. But now you violated another issue. Namely, Bitaltem Tamud Torah. You were lazy and not engaged in the mitzvah of the study of Torah. You weren't doing enough Tamud Torah. So the Sar Tzva Hashem says to Yehoshua, you have a problem. You are about to go and conquer Yericho. On what merit? On what schus? You're going to go conquer Yericho. On the merit of the Avodat Beit HaMikdash, you just violated that by eliminating, for whatever reason, the daily offering. On the merit of the fact that you're the leader and teacher of Torah and the heir of Moshe Rabbeinu, no. So I expect you to be sitting and learning Torah. And what do I find? You're busy preparing for battle. Go back to the Beis Medrash. Amar lo. So Yeshua says to him, Al eizem ehen bata. Okay, you've identified two problems. Which one of these two problems is the one for which you have come to me right now, chastise me for? Amar lo, atabat. I've come for the one right now. You should be sitting and studying Torah. That's the case. Miyad, it says, V'yalen Yehoshua b'layla u betocha emek. Yehoshua went and he slept that night in the valley. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, what does that mean, says Rabbi Yochanan? Milamed shalan be'omka shel halacha. It means he went and he slept in the depths, the emek, the depths of halacha. How this Gemara is traditionally understood is that Yehoshua cannot hope to cross into the battlegrounds of Yericho unless he's fortified with the study of Torah. He sits in the Beis Medrash and takes his people and his soldiers and he sits in the Beis Medrash, and then the power of sitting in the Beis Medrash and learning Torah will protect them on their battle against Yericho. I'm not quite sure that that's how it's traditionally understood, but beyond that issue, I'll show you the Radak's response to it.
It's strange because if you take the Masechet Sota, the last Mishnah, the Tosafot Tanit Baruch Olam HaChofetz, it's a little bit not coming together with this.
100%. This Gemara is very, very strange. Very strange. And I'll come back to what I think the Pshat of this Gemara means. But I first want to show you the Radak. This is a Radak that make your hair stand on edge. Radak says, first of all, on this pasuk, Perakei pasuk Yudalid, on the verse of Tabati, says the Radak, Yesh Budrash. First, he talks about what it means. We'll come back to what it means. But then he says, Yesh Budrash. What's the drash? Kibala hafchidam al bitul Torah. That this malach came to frighten them, to punish them, over the transgression of not studying Torah. The al shebitlu hayom she'avar tamicho ben habay. And the fact that yesterday they didn't bring the korban tamicho ben habay. Amar lo Yehoshua leiz mehem batya. So Yeshua says to him, which one did you come from? Amar lo atabati. I came now because of the immediate concern of bitul Torah. Klamar bitul Torah shatem betelim ata. So immediately the response was, miyad v'yalan Yehoshua betocha emek shalan b'yom kashel halacha. Says the Radak, v'zeh drash rachok. This drash is very far from the pshat, because ki ein shat hamilchama shat talmud Torah. Because there's a time for studying Torah, and there's a time for the army to engage in battle. And if the army is engaged in battle, that's not a time to sit in the Beis Medrash. It's a wild Radak. And it's a polemical Radak. I'm not quite sure exactly what historical polemic the Radak was addressing, but the language that it uses here is very powerful. Ein shat mechama, shat talmud Torah. The polemical, he's addressing something. He's addressing something. I'm not quite sure what in his time and place was the issue that he was addressing, but it's not the kind of a language that you would use if you're just going through the pshat of the perush of the Chumash. So I have two very different perspectives on what the purpose of the Sar Tzva Hashem is. On the one hand, we have this notion of not just a malach. Right? Who is he? He's a Sar Tzva Hashem. There's a military context to this Sar Tzva Hashem. We'll see what that is in a moment. On the other hand, I have this Gemara that says, Atabati, that he came to tell Yehoshua, listen, your job is to sit and study Torah. As if to say, leave Yericho to me, you go study Torah. Says the Radak, not so. On the contrary, ein shat mechama, shat talmud Torah. The time of war is not a time for Talmud Torah. So I have a simple question. Which of these two interpretations, the Radak on the other hand, on the one hand, and the Gemara on the other, which of these two interpretations actually fits the pshat of this story better? I know it's a dangerous question to ask, but once in a while you have to ask it. Which of these two interpretations, the Radak, who says that this was the Sar Tzeva was coming to tell Yehoshua, I'm with you, go, we're gonna win this battle, I'm with you all the way, or the Gemara that says that the Sar Tzeva Hashem came to him to say to him, my dear Yehoshua, you should be sitting in the Beis Medrash. You think the Radak? Sounds like it, right? On the face of it. I wouldn't ask the question if it was the Radak, right? It was it would be too obvious.
Right.
In other words, I think the Radak is correct on a global scale. From the broad picture of Tanakh as a whole, certainly when a melech went to war, he took his army with him. Afilu chatan mechupato. Chatan mechadaro. Everybody went to war. Especially if it was a war of self-defense, a war of the conquest of Canaan, there's no exemptions. Yericho is different. Yericho is different. The message that this Sar Tzeva Hashem came to tell Yehoshua is, as far as Yericho is concerned, Yehoshua, go back to the Beis Medrash. That's precisely what the message is. The Gemara got it. The Gemara hit the nail on the head. The pshat of this Sar Tzeva Hashem is, Yehoshua, go back to the Beis Medrash. You're not needed here. Oh! How is he going to conquer it here? That's exactly the point. How is he going to conquer Yehoshua? Yericho? He's not. God is. Yehoshua doesn't know it. That's exactly the point that the Malach comes to tell him. This is the point. This is the turning point. He sent spies to Yericho because he thought he was going to have to take out Yericho. He spent a reconnaissance mission because he thought he was going to have to take out Yericho. God comes to him, sends him a Malach, and he says to him, my dear Yehoshua, go back to the Beis Medrash. This battle is mine. This battle is mine. Let's talk about Shal Na'alecha. Why do you take off your shoes? So ostensibly, you take off your shoes because a holy place, right? On what basis? And therefore you take your shoes off?
It's
only two places in Tanakh where an individual is told to take his shoes off. Moshe at the burning bush and Yehoshua here. They're both being sent on a mission, and in both cases the mission is defined as God's mission, not Moshe's. The whole dialogue with Moshe is Moshe being sent to Mitzrayim to take Israel out of Egypt. Don't think this is your doing. On the contrary, this is my doing. Yehoshua is being sent into Yericho. God comes to him and says, Yehoshua, this isn't your battle. This is my battle. Sar Tzeva Hashem, Atabati, I've come now to take out Yericho. Let's talk about shoes for a minute. Who wears shoes? Everybody wears shoes, right? Not in biblical times. Very few people wore shoes. It wasn't like you walked into a local shoe store and you picked up a pair of shoes. Who wore shoes? Who standardly wore shoes? Soldiers in the army. So there's a na'al there in that context, but it doesn't necessarily mean that everybody's walking around with shoes. On the contrary, the elders, those who can afford it, the Sanhedrin, soldiers, but soldiers always had to wear shoes. In other words, Shal Na'alecha Mi'Araglecha Ki Makom Asher Ata Omed Admat Kodesh, who has two messages. On the one hand, it's a holy place. You take off your shoes. You walk to the Beit Mikdash, typically you took off your shoes. On the other hand, here, in the context of Sar Tzeva Hashem, I don't think the issue was the fact that he was standing in the place of the, of some destiny related to Mamar HaSinui or the Beit HaMikdash. What he was telling him is, Yeshua, take your uniform off. Put your gun down. He was a shepherd. He was walking through the desert. But the message was the same. Yeshua, take your shoes off, take your uniform off. You're not going in this as a soldier. You're going in this as a Navi. He was being sent on a mission to take Israel out of Egypt. That makes him a soldier, by definition. That's exactly the point. That he was told that this mission is going from God and not through Moshe. Not Moshe's role is secondary at best. It was exactly the message he needed to convey to Moshe at the same time. The same message. This is a malach. This mission comes from God. This mission will be defined by God. There will be a time for Yeshua, for Moshe to play the role of the warrior. That will come. Sichon, Og. Moshe will play the role of the warrior. Not now. Not here. Not at Mitzrayim, and not at Yericho. Not at Yericho. The Sar Tzva Hashem says to him, Atabati, I will take out Yericho. The first battle of Eretz Canaan will take place in a fashion that will let everybody know who's running this campaign. Subsequently, Yeshua, you're on your own. Want to put your shoes back on, go fight your battles, give them to hate. And he will. One of the things that we will trace as we go through Yeshua is that the level of direct divine providence and involvement in each campaign, in each battle, gets smaller as we go through the book. Absolutely. They are being weaned off the miracles of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, without question. And the process starts all over again. We are going to go back to Yitzhak Mitzrayim. We're going to go back and start from all of the miracles of the of Yitzhak Mitzrayim in the at public breadth of the miracles of Yitzhak Mitzrayim. The first thing Yeshua is going to do when he crosses into the land of Israel is going to split the Jordan, like we split the sea. Then he's going to take out the walls of Yericho in a manner with trumpets in 7 days, in a manner which is very reminiscent of Yitziat Mitzrayim, of Mamar HaSinai. And we're going to wean them off the man. And slowly, over the course of time, we are going to wean them off all the miracles of Yitziat Mitzrayim, but we're going to start back. We're going to go back to square one, and we're going to go through the process again. Much as Yeshua is the heir to Moshe, the process, the conquest of Canaan, is going to parallel Yitziat Mitzrayim. From Shalna Alecha until the end. But the message of the Sar Tzva Hashem is exactly the opposite of the message of the Radak. The Radak is correct conceptually. When you go to war, that's not a time for sitting and studying Torah. That's a time for focusing on the engagement at that moment. But not in Yericho. Yericho is different.
So the public display of both events is the same? They have equality?
Which two events? I think the goal, the public nature of the and the impact is supposed to be the same, absolutely. Rachav said it herself. We have heard what you did when you dried up the waters of the Amsuf and how you took out the kings of Sichon and Og. Remember what happened when they left Mitzrayim. They left Mitzrayim, Kriyat Yamsuf was supposed to be the bridge to the conquest of Canaan. From Kriyat Yamsuf, they were supposed to pick up the Torah on the way, 3 days' journey, and into the land of Israel. When Shirat Hayam, when Moshe describes in Shirat Hayam how Namoku kol yoshvei Canaan, all of the inhabitants of Canaan are trembling, that the fear and trembling has gripped them, that their hearts have melted, those are phrases that Rachav quotes. It's not an accident. That was the accomplishment of Yitzhak, of Kriyat Yamsuf. Kriyat Yamsuf sent a ripple of fear through the entire region. What was the result? What happened next? What happened to that fear and that trembling and that absolute trepidation of the power of God and the power of Israel? What happened next? Amalek. What happened next was Amalek. Ve'yavo Amalek ve'ilachem b'refidim. Chalosh atam l'ficharev. Amalek came, waged war. A war that ended, by the way, in a stalemate. The war with Amalek did not end in a victory. It ended in a stalemate. They weakened Yehoshua. They weakened Amalek. They left. They ran. Each side claimed some kind of a quasi-victory. It ended in a stalemate. So what happened to Namoko Koyestri Canaan? What happened to the fear and the trepidation of the inhabitants of Canaan?
Went down.
Amalek came and burst the bubble.
Did she say they still feared?
Wait, second. 1 second. I'll come back to that. That's exactly right. Amalek came and burst the bubble. From Amalek's burst of the bubble, it will take them 40 years to recover. 40 years later, they will recover. And they will be sitting on the edge of the land of Israel. And the nations of Canaan will again be in fear and trepidation of them. From what? Read the pasuk again. Read the pasuk again. Yeah, read it again. Read it out loud. We have heard, Shemanu Asher, Avish Hashem et Meyam Suf, Betzetchem Mitzrayim, Vasher Asitem, Lishnei Machaya Mori, Shereva Yadem. In other words, what's causing them to tremble? It's not a 40-year-old story of Kriyat Yam Suf. A 40-year-old story of Kriyat Yam Suf is nothing. It's folklore. What's causing them to tremble is the fact that the story of Kriyat Yam Suf has been revived. What revived it? The conquest of Sichon and Og, which had just taken place. It took them 40 years to get back to where they were before the Battle of Amalek. Had they gone from Yam Suf to the conquest of Amalek and the eradication of Amalek, had they gone from Yam Suf to Sichon and Og, then the conquest of Canaan would have been very different. What they did was they went from Yam Suf to Amalek. That derailed the process. It'll take us 40 years to recover that whole process. 40 years later, we're going to start it again. Sichon, Og. Kriyat Yam Suf is now a revived memory. And the first thing Yehoshua is going to do is make sure that the inhabitants of Canaan know that Kriyat Yam Suf was real. Because he's going to do it again. And then we're going to reenact Mamon HaSinai. We're going to bring the walls of Yericho down with a bunch of trumpets. This is all Tzar Tzva Hashem. This is the miracle. This is the hand of God. This is the message that the inhabitants of Canaan are going to see and hear. And Yeshua has to understand that first battle is different from the rest of the nations of Canaan. And Yeshua responds to it differently. We'll see at the end, after the conquest of Yericho, the first thing he does is he sets Yericho up as a cherem. Nobody's allowed to touch Yericho. Nobody's allowed to rebuild Yericho. Nobody's allowed to take any of the spoils of Yericho. A decree he doesn't make for any other city. Yericho is different. Because he understood this message. Tzar Tzva Hashem. Do we ever talk about Tzva Hashem? The concept in Tanakh of what Tzva Hashem means? We never spoke about Tzva Hashem? Wow. You sure? Okay. I have 10 minutes to show you my favorite story in Tanakh. I can't believe it. Okay. I'm going to do it right now. Let's understand what Tzva Hashem means. Besides what various groups today in the Jewish world have turned it into. It's not what the original context of the expression Tzva Hashem means. Take a look at Melachim Bet Perek Vav. Melachim Bet Perek Vav. Perek Vav. By the way, if you were looking for the link between the fall of Yericho and Yetziat Mitzrayim, Chazal say that it took place in Zayin Shel Pesach. calculate from the moment of Yericho, 7 days, the Erev Pesach, 7 days later, Shvi Yishol Pesach, is the day of Kriyat Yamsuf. Mm-hmm. Melachim Bet Perek Vav. Context of the story. King of Aram has a problem. He's trying to wage war against Israel. I'll give you the background, then I'll show you the line that I want to... King of Aram is trying to wage war against Israel. He only has one problem. Every time he sends his army against Israel, he finds the army of Israel in a surprise attack. He finds that the army of Israel is ready and waiting for him. Take a look at Pasuk Yud. Vayishlach Melech Yisrael. Vayishlach Melech Yisrael el makom. Let's go back to Pasuk Tet. Vayishlach Ish Elokim el Melech Yisrael emor. The Navi, Elisha, would say to the king of Israel, Yishamer me'avo ha-makom hazeh ki sham Aram nechitim. Watch yourself when you go to that place, because that's where the army of Aram is in camping, laying in ambush. In other words, Israel has a very good intelligence system. They have a wonderful satellite system. It's called the Navi. Called the Navi. Better than all the satellites in the world. So the king would send a delegation, and they would say, okay, don't go there, watch yourself. In the meantime, the king of Aram is distraught. He doesn't know what to do with himself. Every time he sends his army in a particular place, Israel's waiting for him. He thinks he's got informer and spies. He doesn't know what's going on. So he says, who amongst us is loyal to the king of Israel? So one of his servants says to the king, Lo adani ha-melech, ki Elisha ha-navi yasher b'Yisrael yagid la-melech Yisrael et ha-dvarim asher tedaber b'chadar mishkavecha. They have a man, his name is Elisha, he's the Navi. He can tell his king what you whisper in your bedchamber. Nothing is sacred. So he sends and said, okay, I'll take out the satellite. Give me an army, and I will take out Elisha. Take out Elisha, he solves his problem. Finds out that Elisha is living in Dotan. Vayishlach shama susim v'rechev v'chayil kaved. He sends horses and chariots and a great army to destroy Elisha. Vayavo laila v'yakifu el ha'ir. In the middle of the night, they come and they surround the city. Vayashkem misharet isha elokim. The next morning, the isha elokim, the Navi, Elisha's servant, man by the name of Gehazi, got up. Vayetze, and he went out into the get the morning paper. And he saw an entire army surrounding his little hilltop. Horses and chariots and soldiers. And he woke up one day to go get the morning paper and drink his coffee, and he sees his entire house is surrounded by the entire army of Aram. It's a frightening sight. So this Nar says to Elisha, Aha Adoni, Echana said, whoa, my master, what are we going to do? Elisha's answer, Vayomer Altira, don't be afraid. Kirabim Asher Itanu Measher Otam. My dear Elisha, we outnumber them. Elisha and his Na'ar, surrounded by Sus v'rechev v'chel kaved ma'od, horses, chariots, and a great army. And Elisha says to his lad, not to worry, we outnumber them. If you were Elisha's lad, what would you do at this point in time? There's nowhere to run. But you might think that your master has gone a little mad. Vayitpalel Elisha. Elisha prays. Now, what do you think Elisha would pray about? What should Elisha's prayer be? Save me. Ana Hashem Oshiana. Ana Hashem Atznichana. Save me. Vayitpalel Elisha Vayomar. Hashem, Pekachna et einav vire. God, open up the eyes of my lad that he may see. Open up this fool's eyes. Let him see what I see. Vayifkach Hashem et einei ha'na'ar. God, open up the eyes of the na'ar. Vayar vihine ha'har male susim varechev ish. Svivot Elisha. Opened up his eyes and he saw that the mountain was surrounded by horses and chariots of fire. Whose horses and chariots? Tzva Hashem. You know that God has an army? Horses and chariots and soldiers. Horses manned by angels. Chariots manned by angels. Soldiers manned by angels. Tzva Hashem. Every tzva needs a general. Okay, God has a general over his army. It's called Tzar Tzva Hashem. And we outnumber them. And I'm not worried, says Elisha. All he needs is for the Nar to see. When Yaakov comes back from Lavan's house, Vayifgu'u b'malachei Elokim, and he sees, encounters angels. Vayomer, machane Elokim ze. I told you once, the word machane in Tanakh always means a military camp. Machane Elokim ze, Yaakov says. This is the camp of God. He saw angels, and he said, this is the camp of God. What was he referring to? Vayikra shem hamakom ahu machanayim. Machanayim means the double camp. He sees angels, he calls it the camp of God, and then he calls the place double camp. What's he talking about? Right? What's he talking about? Who are the two armies? Who are the two camps? Correct. He has an army, he has a camp, he has wealth, he has soldiers, he's ready to do battle with Esav. Coming back to do battle with Esav, and he meets a group of angels. Well, what purpose are those angels? If not to protect him against Esav. When he left Israel and he saw angels going up and angels coming down, Rashi says he saw Malachi Eretz Yisrael going up and Malachi Chutzlatz coming down. He comes back to Eretz Yisrael and he meets again the Malachi Eretz Yisrael. Well, coming for what purpose? To form a machaneh, so that they can fight against and protect him against Esav, to which he calls the place Machanayim, because he has his camp and he fights together with the camp of the angels of God. There is a notion that runs through Tanakh that God fights with an army. We don't talk about God's providence. It's not simply a function of, oh, God will be with us. We're talking about the combination of whatever it means, but we're talking about the combination, the synthesis of Machane Elokim and Machane Yisrael. Until the Malach comes to Yehoshua and says, for Yericho, Shalna Alecha, you can take your shoes off. Put your guns down. This battle is mine. The next one is yours. Atkan. Besrat Hashem, next week, we move on to Perek Gimel.
Even keep them?
No, actually, I would prefer if you keep them and just bring them back every week. That'll be better.